Good morning, everyone, and welcome to CITR 101.9 FM Radio. My name is Jack Campbell, and we are broadcasting live from the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Musqueam First Nations people. If you're new to Breaking Barriers, this show focuses on music of the 20th century across genres, artists, disciplines, and compositional areas and ensemble, focusing on classical, jazz, and popular idioms. Now, I'm particularly excited about today's episode because in this Thursday morning's broadcast, I will be focusing on 1960s British rock groups and how they were influenced by classical and world styles in their compositions and performance. So to begin, I'd like to play a track that is sometimes considered history's greatest B-side. And I'll be back right after the song to discuss it.
Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know, and all the people that come and go stop and say hello. On the corner is a banker with a motor car, the little children laughing at him behind his back.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, this is CITR 101.9 FM Radio. My name is Jack Campbell, and you're listening to Breaking Barriers with Jack Campbell, live Thursdays at 10 a.m. Today's episode focuses on the relationship between British rock and roll of the 1960s and classical music, in terms of those British artists being inspired by the compositional, technical, and instrumental troupes of classical music. Now, we've just listened to the Beatles' classic song, Penny Lane, from their release Magical Mystery Tour, but it was originally intended for Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. It's most known, however, for being the B-side to Strawberry Fields Forever, and due to its infamy, is often considered history's most famous B-side single. Now, some music historians believe that this single truly merges popular and classical styles for a multitude of reasons. One is the piccolo trumpet solo in the middle of the tune, which was inspired by Paul McCartney hearing a performance live on the BBC of Bach's second Brandenburg Concerto with its two piccolo trumpets. This led to him recruiting the player from that BBC orchestra to come to the solo and perform the trumpet solo, which you just heard. Now, the piccolo trumpet is a rather unusual instrument and remarkably high in pitch, which led to some people believing that the recording had actually just been a normal trumpet, which was sped up. But it is, in fact, a very virtuosic UK trumpet player. The song also goes through about 12 different modulations. Now, of course, modulation technique is one of the foundations of classical harmony and counterpoint, particularly obvious in the music of Bach, because that's sort of what it originates from, and then mastered by Mozart and Haydn. And the notions of progression established by those classical masters have continued all throughout the Western canon's harmonic tradition into the present day in classical styles. But until the Beatles, popular music had very much revolved around traditional blues and country 3 and 4 and sometimes even less chord formulas, which were very standard harmonic progressions. Now, in that song, McCartney does follow a very standard progression. In fact, a lot of McCartney's music is based on the movement of the first chord to the fourth chord. But in that piece, it constantly modulates up by a step or by a perfect interval, which takes it into different harmonic realms that conjure new feelings and sensations in the listener, and also progress the piece forward and ultimately, upon the return modulation, signify the end of the piece. So it creates a grand journey, not just used through rhythmic momentum or pulse or drive, as was common in the popular music of the time, but through harmonic sophistication. Now, this piece draws heavily upon Western classical styles and musings in its harmonic language, but other bands of the time traveled to other nations and other styles of writing for their inspiration. Here's a piece from 1968 by the Rolling Stones, which I will discuss after it is finished playing, but particularly listen to the rhythm section's use of samba and rumba rhythmic patterns. Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones. Please to meet you. Hope you guess my name. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM radio. My name is Jack Campbell. Welcome to Breaking Barriers with Jack Campbell. Thursdays at 10 a.m., broadcasting from the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Musqueam First Nations people. And you've just been listening to Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones. Now, for those of you who are just tuning in, on Breaking Barriers, we like to take music from the 20th century across all styles and genres and analyze it and think critically about it and make connections between it and explore perhaps slightly unknown areas of its musical brilliance. So today's episode is all about British invasion rock and roll and how it was influenced by classical and world styles. Now, Sympathy for the Devil took the Rolling Stones many months to record properly. And it is a very well-orchestrated composition with multi-layered everything across the instrumental spectrum. One trope of the Rolling Stones' music that was very common at the time was Keith Richards' use of the multi-layered guitar. And in this case, it's very interesting because it becomes an even more classical technique, whereas a classical composer will multi-layer acoustic instruments, such as violins or cellos. Richards will actually take an acoustic guitar, record it through a portable tape player, overload the tape player, and then multi-track that. So you have an acoustic instrument made to have an electronic sound but still have the warmth and texture of an acoustic instrument, and then multi-layered across the piece. It also represents sort of the first major foray of popular music into exploring more traditionally Latin American musical textures. Charlie Watts, the Rolling Stones drummer, says that this song was originally intended to be a very slow, bluesy tune, and it just wasn't working. And then the Stones began to experiment with the use of, for example, bongos and other types of hand drums in the studio, and Charlie actually strived to have a samba sound in the way he played the drum kit. And this was a revelation in popular music because the exploration of those styles, which at that time were extremely popular in jazz through groups like the Stan Getz Quartet, etc., was an entirely new style. And as you can hear in that song, it's very convincing. And with lyrics like that that are all about the social change of the 1960s and the horrors of the 20th century, it provides a very strangely moving context where you have this bubbling, vibrating rhythmic texture to accompany lyrics that speak so strongly of change and strife. Now I'm going to move to another track that is very much a traditional rock and roll piece from a very, very revolutionary British rock and roll group, but really strongly dwells on traditional Indian raga tradition. Please enjoy the Yardbirds with Heart Full of Soul.
To you, she don't love me. Just give her my message, tell her of my plea, and I go. Well, if she had me back again, well, I would never make her sad. I got a heart full of sorrow.
That was Heartful of Soul by the Yardbirds. Now, the Yardbirds are often considered one of the most influential groups in rock and roll history, mainly because of their having Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, and Jimmy Page as guitar players. That particular song featured Jeff Beck, and it's an excellent example of something that Beck was actually very known for, and later in this episode we'll hear more of his playing, which was to have an incredible ear for not just the harmonies that the Western world had gotten accustomed to. And in this piece, he takes scales that are from the traditional Indian raga tradition, particularly versions of what I guess our Western ears would consider a harmonic minor scale, but in those cultures have an entirely different musical meaning and a much more sophisticated one, and incorporating that into his electric guitar playing and his fuzzbox sound, as well as his, I guess we could say, that very gritty, dissonant, angry, anguished tone that is so common in his music. You know, Joe Bonamassa, the guitar player, often says that whenever Beck plays a solo, he always seems so angry. And in that piece, what really strikes me about it is how you have a very angsty, youthful, passionate, furious rock and roll anthem, but it's got this sheen over it, this gloss of this very interesting harmonic sophistication, and it sort of piques your interest because, you know, those angsty, passionate songs, there are so many of them, especially nowadays, but back then there were already, I mean, that was the purpose of rock and roll, it was youthful rebellion. So to have it with that greater level of harmonic sophistication involved, really, to me, I mean, it seems quite marvelous indeed. Now, we're going to fast forward here a few years to after Eric Clapton had left the Yardbirds. He went on a new musical adventure with two jazz musicians, the drummer Ginger Baker and the bass player Jack Bruce, to form the rock group Cream. Now, Clapton's blues-based style of playing, coupled with these two master musicians' understanding of jazz, and Jack Bruce was a Royal Academy of Music-trained bass player, and he always said that Bach was his hero, allows for some fascinating compilations of style. And I call it a compilation because each song seems to have a different angle they take on the rock and roll piece. Now, this track is perhaps their biggest foray into a more classical style, because the piece, especially the intro, is based in 5/4 time, which at that point in history was unheard of in popular music, and the drum beat is a bolero, which, of course, we all know most famously from Ravel's Bolero. And then it switches into a more rock and roll territory, and also the band members try to do three-part choral harmony at many points throughout the piece. Here's Cream with White Room, live from their 1968 farewell concert.
Station. Black roof country, no gold payments. Can you hear that? The SOS to the world from the people of Ukraine. And you've never wanted to help more, yet you've never felt more helpless. Here's what you can do. Give to the Ukraine Humanitarian Crisis Appeal. The Red Cross is on the ground to make sure your donation supplies food, water, shelter, and other urgent support. Show everyone affected by the Ukraine conflict that you hear them, loud and clear. Go to redcross.ca.
And after that very important announcement for obviously an extremely important cause, I'd like to welcome you back to Breaking Barriers with Jack Campbell live Thursdays at 10 a.m. from CITR 101.9 FM radio. Today's episode is focused on the relationship between classical styles of both Western and Eastern cultures and more traditional musical styles on British invasion rock and roll from the 1960s. Now, we just listened to Cream performing White Room, in which we just discussed the classical and influences on that piece. Now, what is more traditionally considered classical music than opera? And what is a more important development in the history of popular music than the creation of the rock opera by Pete Townsend of The Who. We're now going to hear three tracks from Tommy, the rock opera, by The Who. And this is my actual favorite performance of these pieces, The Who live at the Isle of Wight Festival in 1970, but in keeping with today's theme, these songs were written in 1969, and just like any piece of classical music, when you're dating it, you don't date the first recording, you date when it was composed. So we'll hear three different tracks by The Who: Christmas, The Acid Queen, and Pinball Wizard, and then come back to analyze them. Please stay tuned and enjoy this brilliant rock and roll operatic performance.
Did you ever see the faces of the children? They get so excited. Waking up on Christmas morning, out before the winter sun ignited. They believe in dreams and all they need is food and generosity. Tommy doesn't know what day it is. Yeah! He doesn't know who Jesus was or what day it is. How can he be saved from the eternal grave?
Tommy, can you hear me? 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 Can ya? Can you hear me?
Your child ain't all he should be now. This girl will put him right. I'll show you what he could be now. Just give me one night.
One night!
I'm the gypsy, the acid queen. Hey, before we stop on the gypsy, I'm guaranteed.
Since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball. From solo down to bright, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him in any amusement hall. That deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball. He stands like a statue, becomes the father of the machine.
disciples lead him in, and he just does the rest. He's got crazy clever fingers, never sees him fall. That death from a black kid sure plays a mean pinball.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people, so check out the real deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night, right at 9 p.m., after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
Yes, indeed. Do not miss that jazz program, for it is absolutely marvelous. Now, we just heard selections live from the rock opera by The Who, Tommy. Now, in a rock and roll sonic idiom, that piece holds all the tropes of a classical opera. It has a storyline, a libretto composed by Pete Townsend. It has an overture, and Townsend even cheekily has something he calls an underture, which is the second theme, main major theme, once things begin to go sideways in the plot line. And it is orchestrated, it has multiple voices, multiple characters, and a distinct storyline across it. This merges rock and roll with popular styles. And the classical world. Now, of course, that is a classical world from rather a long time ago. And by the time that The Who was writing music, opera had changed quite considerably. And classical music was now the avant-garde classical world. And writing traditional operas with traditional librettos and melodies and themes wasn't necessarily what was in style. However, to the more avant-garde classical world, the Beatles very much understood what was going on. They were mesmerized by composers such as John Cage and Karlheinz Stockhausen, and so much that they influenced the composition of the Beatles' White Album. Here's a track from that album influenced by the electronic noise work of Karlheinz Stockhausen and the indeterminate chance music of John Cage and his prepared piano music, called Revolution No. 9, which is sometimes jokingly be said that it is the most widely distributed avant-garde piece of classical music in the world due to its inclusion on the Beatles' White Album. Here's Revolution No. 9.
Number nine, 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 number nine.
Thank you. a bit slow.
If you're just tuning in, my name is Jack Campbell, and this is Breaking Barriers with Jack Campbell, live on CITR 101.9 FM radio, broadcasting live from the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Musqueam First Nations people. And this is Revolution Number 9 by the Beatles, often considered the world's most widely distributed avant-garde masterpiece. And today's episode is all about tying British invasion rock and roll groups and discussing their classical and world music influences. Now, this is heavily influenced by avant-garde classical styles of Stockhausen and John Cage. And it's 9 minutes long, and even I will admit, after a while it becomes a little bit disorienting to listen to. So, here's the Beatles' first revolution, which often is considered perhaps the first heavy metal piece. And although there aren't any direct classical from any part of the world influences within this piece, what it does very strongly carry a very common theme within all music, and that is the desire for political change. And this dates back to Mozart and Beethoven in their operatic works and even to the Renaissance era. Here's the Beatles with Revolution Number 1.
Okay.
So there's quite a startling contrast between the Beatles' two revolutions there. And speaking of contrast, we'll be back after this ad to discuss Two very important contrasts in the music world, indeed.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or grocery checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek Coffee today.
In October of 2022, the Vancouver Adapted Music Society held its flagship event, the Strong Sessions, for the fifth time. All Strong Sessions feature a variety of musicians with disabilities, paired with established local artists and bands. Each month until September this year, VAMS will be releasing the performances from our 2022 show on the Reimagine Radio YouTube channel, where you can also find past Strong Sessions content. To stay up to date with us, subscribe to the channel and drop a like to show some support.
And now we are in the last portion of this episode of Breaking Beers with Jack Campbell, live on Thursday mornings at CITR 101.9 FM radio, broadcasting from the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Musqueam First Nations people. On today's episode, and for those of you who are new to Breaking Barriers, on these episodes we celebrate music of the 20th century and like to analyze it. Consider it, think about it critically, draw connections, and explore that which perhaps has not been previously considered about the piece. Now, today's episode is all about tying together music of the British invasion of the 1960s and illustrating how classical styles from around the world influenced it. And there is probably no more iconic pairing and match, an example of this these two musical worlds meeting in the relationship between Yoko Ono and John Lennon. Yoko Ono, of course, the remarkable conceptual artist and musician. And here she is performing AOS with the Ornette Coleman Quartet. And in this piece fusing rock and roll, contemporary classical, and free jazz.
Thank you.
That was Yoko Ono with the Ornette Coleman Quartet. And now, to symbolize the other side of that partnership, here is John Lennon with Watching the Wheels. In the long history of this song, the main concept that music historians have deemed it represents is Lennon's being so dissatisfied with the popular music climate and just wanting to create the music that he hears in his head and enjoy it. And to me, it seems a perfect way to end this broadcast because it beckons toward the future and reminds us all to never let ourselves be constrained in any sort of artistic box. Watching the Wheels with John Lennon from Double Fantasy.
People say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. Well, they give me all kinds of warnings to save me from ruin. When I say that I'm okay, well, they look at me kind of strange. Surely you're not happy now, you no longer play the game. People say I'm lazy, dreaming my life away. Well, they give me all kinds of advice designed to enlighten me. Watching shadows on the wall. Don't you miss the big time, boy? You're no longer on the ball. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. I really love to watch them roll. No longer
brilliant way to end the episode. What a brilliant piece of music by what a brilliant man. Thank you all so much for listening. My name is Jack Campbell. You've been listening to Breaking Barriers at CITR 101.9 FM radio, live Thursdays at 10 a.m., broadcasting from the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Musqueam First Nations people. Today's episode has been all about drawing connections between British invasion rock and roll from the 1960s and classical idioms from across the world. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening. I sure have had a wonderful time this morning. See you next week.